Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today. Sometimes you just meet someone in life who immediately you feel like is a kindred spirit. And also every interaction you have with them is so joyous that you just want to share them with as many people as possible. And that is my experience with Mark J. Franklin. Mark is a photographer, photo editor, and journalist at Playbill Magazine, aka the Broadway Bible. And I kept seeing Mark at Broadway events and at red carpets. And every time I had my picture taken by him, I felt unselfconscious, which is, that's a little known fact that I want to share right now. And that is a rare thing, to just feel completely at ease in the most unnatural of circumstances, which is a red carpet event. He's so talented. His work is so beautiful. He is such a joyous, incredibly inspiring human. And I am so thrilled that I get to share him with you today, because it's just going to make your day feel great. So welcome, Mark, to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hello, everyone. My guest today is Mark J. Franklin. Mark is a New York City-based photographer specializing in portrait and editorial photography, who is currently working as the photo editor and principal photographer for Playbill. His photos have been featured in the New York Times, the LA Times, Vogue, Elle, the Paris Review, Out Magazine, and many, many more. Highlight subjects that Mark has photographed include Hillary Clinton, Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver, Tina Fey, Jeremy Pope, Darren Criss, and many, many others. I am so thrilled to welcome the extraordinary Mark J. Franklin to the podcast. Hi, Mark.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. This is a true honor.
Oh, well, I have had the honor of looking at your beautiful work and then getting to know you as we both run around the world that is Broadway together. And the thing that is so always heartening about you is your smile. Like, not only do you make beautiful work, but you just put out such positivity into the world, which is why I wanted to have you on the podcast, to share your goodness.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't know. I feel like photography and theater, like, it's all such a passionate thing. And I think especially after this world that we've kind of been through in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, what is there not to be positive about? It's hard work, obviously, but like, we're not doctors. We're not saving lives. Like, it's, you do it because it is a passion and a joy and not the other way around. So I try to keep that first and foremost.
I mean, I think a lot about sort of the ways in which people have an idea about something they want to do with their lives. And there's always sort of an origin story behind it. And I'd love to know a little bit more about where you are from. What was life like in the house you grew up in? And how did this world of artistry enter your DNA, as it were?
Sure. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland, which is really funny because the two things that I always get when I tell people that, it's either, oh, so it's like The Wire or it's like Hairspray.
What was your Baltimore?
Well, I mean, a little bit mix of both. Baltimore, like, it's a major city, but also I was a creative kid. So definitely saw the world with a little bit more of like the creative bubbly side of that. So, I mean, I was a creative kid all growing up. I was really kind of nerdy and bookish, and I loved drawing. I loved art of all forms. I did theater in high school. And I also was like in chorus, and I played an instrument, and I did like speech and debate, like all of those things. I was definitely like an overachiever and definitely spread myself too thin trying to like dive into all of those things. The origin story of it, though, was, yeah, I just kind of had a bunch of just artistic interests. And then I went to college at Boston College for theater and English. But I had always loved photography. And my junior year, I was just kind of doing too much of, you know, between overloading with my double major and classes and then all of these extracurriculars that I had added on. I just kind of got to a point where I was burned out, and I said, I'm not going to do anything for a semester that is like productive, quote unquote. And instead, I'm just going to do what I want to do. And I've always wanted to explore photography, like in a more structured way. I had always had like point and shoot cameras and all of that stuff. But I said, I'm going to dive into photography. So I got my first DSLR camera, which stands for digital single lens reflector. There's a mirror on the inside of your camera. That's all the technical stuff. But I got one of those and really just started exploring and playing and providing myself with another creative outlet, since I was just too overcommitted and too kind of stressed out with like coursework and stuff. So I did that. And then I consider it my junior year crisis instead of my my quarter life crisis. I said no to things. I got a camera. I almost got a tattoo. and I now have two of them, but I almost got a tattoo. And then I stopped eating meat. Like, I became a vegetarian. And the ones that stuck were being a vegetarian and photography.
When do you start kind of taking pictures of the world of theater and theater artists?
That was almost pretty immediately. Since I studied theater, I was in a BA program, and I knew that my friends and my classmates were the people that I had to collaborate with. So, also, it's junior year of college, and so many people needed portfolio pieces, especially designers, if they were applying to grad school. So almost, you know, like 2 weeks into having my camera, my friends were like, I need to put together a portfolio of shots for my grad school applications. They have a production photographer, but I'm looking for someone who can just capture my design as a whole. So I dove that way, and then also just practiced with headshots and both headshots, but then also taking my friends out and trying to do something more editorial and creative, which is interesting. This is before the world of Instagram. It's before, I don't remember exactly when Instagram launched, but it's 2011. The way that we view photography and used Instagram has completely shifted. I think at the time, most of us thought of like Instagram as the little app that you can use to put like a fun filter over your photo rather than like curating a brand, quote unquote, and all of those things.
Exactly. So,
and even my early things that I was shooting, I didn't post on Instagram or use Instagram because I thought I'm editing this myself. I don't need to put a filter on this. So I just didn't share them. So it was 2011. Almost, 10 years ago.
Okay, well, when I think of the names of people that I read off that you have photographed in a decade since this moment you're describing happened, Hillary Clinton, Andrew Garfield, Tina Fey, me.
Yes. Although we need to do like some feature photography because I photographed you on Step and Repeats. But we have not, Step and Repeats are always so tricky because you have 30 seconds with a person before they get into their event. Like they just want to go see their show. They want to go into their party and everyone is really nice, but like the photos are not the main event. The photos are the formality so you can get your ticket to go into the thing.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You and I
will. That's how we sing for our supper to get into the thing that we want to see. Also, yes. The red carpet thing, that's such an, I would love to talk to you about that because there's also a good red carpet is orchestrated in a way so that you and the photographer have a moment with each other. Mm-hmm. That's a successful red carpet event. Often there are many photographers and all of them are trying to get a shot and sort of vying for your eye line. And it feels really strange as the person on the red carpet because you want to make sure that everybody, that you connect with all the artists on both sides, the photographer artist and you as the artist trying to curate some kind of moment in the mayhem. And so, just figuring out that. Would be a great conversation so that everyone is respected in the process.
The most successful red carpets that I have found, it's just orderly, right? Like, and it's hard because there is so much happening. There are a bunch of photographers, there's a bunch of people. But if you're able to just go down the line, it makes it a lot easier and smoother if you go down the line and you're prepared. And part of that is just knowing like, to smile or to give your smize or whatever look that you want to. It's not always like the best place to chit chat, which happens a lot, specifically on the Broadway beat, because we all know each other.
Yeah.
But the moment you start chit chatting, even though you are so excited to, like, I'm so excited when I see my colleagues on a red carpet, but I'm like, if I start chatting, this is going to just completely mess up the assembly line.
Exactly. Not to mention a lot of pictures of people half, you know, talking instead of
right.
Messy pictures.
So I think the balance that I always try to give when people are in front of me on the red carpet is like practice. Just know that you're just gonna like smile, step, and repeat. And then on my end, similarly, I'm thinking just be prepared for the fast-paced nature of it. Don't be the person to hold things up, but also still be warm enough so that you're getting an authentic smile. And also, if like step and repeats, for me at least, especially when you're on a press line, you're not the house photographer and you can't float and do all of those things, they are not high art. So this is not my chance to stage a feature photo shoot with someone. This is my chance to get someone smiling, looking great. The point of it is to show you were there, not
exactly.
Like, this is the Vogue
exactly,
cover.
Exactly, exactly. So how long after you got to New York did the Playbill job come up?
A year and a half. Yeah, I moved in the summer of 2015 and I got hired January of 2017. So yeah.
How did you pay bills for the year and a half that you were here before you had a steady gig?
I worked so many jobs.
Like what were the jobs?
I worked at a restaurant as a host. I worked for actually a theater licensing and publishing company called Dramatist Play Service. So I worked for them as an admin. I just mailed a whole bunch of scripts from their mailroom and did like odds and ends. I did that. I was an assistant to a film actor who had his own production company. So I did that. I also was the social media director for two theater companies still back in Boston. And then I freelanced. But I think for me, in Boston, I had to have a full-time job and able to support myself. So I was working at the Boston Children's Hospital in a completely different career field. It wasn't my career, but I recognize like market research, and that is a complete, that's someone's career. And I moved to the city, and I knew from those, that time after, you know, between 22 and 25 when I was in Boston, I learned that when I moved to New York, I did not want to work another full-time job and then do my creative passion on the side. I wanted my creative life to be my full-time job. And I would rather do smaller jobs that maybe didn't pay enough, but did enough to, you know, help me pay my rent. I'd rather do that, because then when I log out of work at my host stand job, I don't have to think about that at the end of the day. I can go off. I have flexibility. I have time. I don't have to, you know, check the email and think, okay, how is the restaurant doing? That's not my business. So I gave myself those jobs to be able to provide more flexibility and freedom for my own creative practice, with the hopes that it would become full time. And then it did.
In the middle of all this, about 2 years into the job, mm-hmm. COVID strikes. What happens to your job and Playbill, which is the touchstone of our industry in so many ways? What happened?
Yeah. I'm still like parsing out what happened, because so much of that experience was just keep the ball rolling. So COVID happened after 3 years of me being at Playbill.
Okay.
And my job had just grown so much.
And is that because you're one of these people who doesn't just do what you're asked to do, but sees what else needs to be done and jumps in?
Yeah, okay. For sure.
That's my impression. Yes.
Yeah. Because also, in addition to photographing, I'm also writing. I also, even outside of writing features that I am photographing, I like writing in general. So I also write a bunch for our site. I create my own features myself. So I just had and because I'd been there for 3 years, I had a big understanding of the editorial side of things beyond just the photographing side. And so in addition to me creating artwork before the pandemic, I was also using pre-existing artwork to tell stories, whether that is lookbacks, quizzes, deep dives into theater history. So I had all of that. And so when COVID struck, unfortunately, we had to let go of the rest of our photo team except me. So the three-person photo team became just me. And I really dove into more of the writing and research and even some of the listicle aspects of my job. Really, at that point, my job was just to use photos and images to continue telling stories, especially because theater fans and the theater world didn't shut down, because even though the physical spaces did, there was still plenty of digital theater. There were still plenty of stories happening throughout that pandemic. And so I was just making content, and still I saw my job as twofold. I always have viewed it this way, but it really crystallized during the pandemic. My job is to engage fans and the community, to tell the news and visualize the news, and then also to shine a spotlight on all of the behind the scenes and lesser known stories that exist in the theater world. And so I got to do that. I did a lot of deep dives into talking to designers, where it's a unpack your career, show me from start to finish five of your favorite designs and why. I would do things where I would just reach out to folks and say, can you show me what your life is like as an actor now? Take photos and we'll do a gallery and an interview. Can you let me commission another photographer for and showcase their own theater project that they are doing during the pandemic? And then also it's a lot of making fun content that is, you know, for the website, like, look at these, you know, 27 imaginative musicals, or can you name the quizzes with like with images attached that would be like, can you name this musical based only on its, you know, title song? So it was a lot of that. And I think it was challenging. It was a lot of just making things, once again, to keep the ball rolling without knowing when things would return.
So talk about when it returned, because I remember seeing you when things started opening up. I was like, how is this person everywhere at once? There was so much going on. Yes.
I think it's a lot. It really feels, I think, like the ball started, the engine started revving up very quickly. Mm-hmm. At first, when we first kind of got back for theater press, at least, people didn't really know what that would look like. What access would we be allowed? What would red carpet look like? Would they still exist? Who knows? And then very quickly, it just kind of ramped up in this really big way, especially because so many shows opened in at the beginning of September. So, I mean, I remember trying to cover, there was that one fateful night, I think it was the 14th of September, where like Hamilton, Wicked, The Lion King, Lackawanna Blues, and some other show I do not remember opened all at the same time, and just trying to figure out, okay, where, how can I cover all of this? And if I can't physically be there, do we have photographers from the production who are able to send us photos? Because once again, I still have to write that as well. And so I think balance has been a really tricky thing that I've been trying to figure out in this time. But it's also really exciting. I mean, these are truly historic moments that I'm able to capture and document for history. And I don't take that lightly. And there are times when I'm like, you know, I'm really tired, but I'm going to try my best to be present to document this, both once again, to give a visual eye for it, but then also even a little selfishly as a theater fan to be able to say I'm in those rooms and I'm in those spaces. And then also the very last part is I haven't gotten to see so many of my colleagues for a year and a half. And even though I am in press and I try to maintain a certain level of objectivity and distance, I really, you know, the theater community is small. So even though I'm able to be objective, I still see these folks, and New York is small. I'm neighbors with my colleagues and all of these things. And so all of these reunions also, these reopenings feel like reunions. They feel like opportunities to just even check in on folks like at a red carpet. Like I said, I'm not able to talk very much, but the amount of times that I'm like, how are you doing? You're doing okay? It's nice to see you. Let's take a photo. Like, it's been a lot of that. So the short version of my answer is it's a lot, but it's also super rewarding.
When you think back to your childhood, did you ever, like, did you, I mean, Maryland, you can get to New York City, you can see a Broadway show. You were not, you know, in Iowa, where it would have been a really big deal for your family to get here. So did you come see Broadway as a kid?
I didn't.
What was the first Broadway show you ever saw?
It was the revival, the 2006, I think it opened, mid-2000s revival of Les Mis. That was the first show I ever saw with my high school theater department. We always did like a trip to New York. And, you know, I grew up poor. I couldn't afford it my freshman and sophomore year, so I didn't. But I went and joined my junior and senior year. So the first show that I ever saw was Hairspray. And I was, oh, not Hairspray, sorry. That was my second year. That was my senior year show that we came and saw that, Hairspray on Broadway. But Les Mis, it was my first time being on Broadway. Was it my first time in New York? It might have been. Mm-hmm. And it was just magical. I immediately was like, I want to be a part of this environment. Once again, being a creative kid and seeing these spaces in which people were making their full lives out of being an artist, in this city that was vibrant and bustling, and I just knew that I wanted to be a part of it in some way, shape, or form. And then I went to college and I started doing photography. And then even what was interesting is a lot of my career has been tied to the theater, I consider my career as a theater artist very separate from my career as a photographer and as a journalist. And they're in tandem. But even as a photographer, I didn't think that I would ever be working on Broadway. I thought I'd be doing something else as a photographer, because I really love magazines and I love journalism and I love newspapers. And I thought I would be more in that world rather than the theater world. So what I'm doing now is a perfect blend of all of those. But never in my wildest dreams that I think I would be doing what I'm doing now. And it's still like pinch me moments that I have. I'm like, oh, that is, it is crazy to me that I can text LaShans. Like, that is wild. I'm still glowing about it. Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Because I know you are a performer as well as, you know, doing this podcast and a storyteller. For you, from the performer side of it, like, what is it like juggling press and showing parts of yourself while also trying to protect yourself and have your own sense of privacy?
I feel like I love talking about the creative process, and I love sharing with people about that. Each opening night to me is a miracle. Having been a part of so many plays that were either successful or not successful, what they all have in common is the work and love and passion for that particular project. And then we still live in a world where like one newspaper can decide how many people are going to get to see it. Mm-hmm. But opening night, no reviews have come out yet. It is all about just the work and celebrating. I mean, with musicals, that track is years and years and years and years of development. For plays, sometimes it's a little shorter. So whether I'm in the thing or just there celebrating the thing, the idea that I can be a part in any way, and honestly, my husband is a really recognizable person. They have me come, but really they want Dominic there, and I'm fine with that.
Please, are you kidding me? Similar to what you just said, when you know everybody, like, we are all so excited when we see you on a red carpet because we know you, and also like you are so just like heart first driven. Like, I know I always get so excited when I see you on a red carpet, as does everyone else, on the media side,
so,
but then also your colleagues.
Yes.
I'm just also stating the truth.
Well, you are a doll. Before I let you go take photographs and write stories and be a historian as well, can you share a little known fact about yourself?
Yes. So my friends know this, but something that I think the theater community at large may not know is that I am an identical twin.
You're everywhere at once.
But what's also very fun is my twin brother is also a journalist.
Stop it.
Previews editor at the New York Times, which makes things really funny because the New York Times is just on 40th Street and our office is on 49th. So the amount of times that I will run into his colleagues and they'll be like, hi, his name is MJ. And they'll be like, hi, MJ. And I have to be like, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. And vice versa, like the amount of actors and other colleagues who don't even, you know me that well, but recognize me and I recognize them. they will see him, think he's me, and then they'll be like, oh, Mark really just snubbed me today.
But and wait, it's not a minute. Your initials are MJ. You are Mark J. Franklin.
Yes.
So is MJ short for something or?
Yeah. So okay. His name is Michael Jerome. I'm Mark Jeremy. And so he goes by MJ. I only go by Mark. It's funny. I use the J professionally in my name for just Google SEO purposes.
Sure.
So we're very identical. We're very similar. It is like a lot of, like sister Mary Kate and Ashley style things, but that also affects how I photograph. I'm very conscious of how I photographed two people at the same time because I have done every cheesy twin photo you have ever thought of or seen. I have done those when I was growing up. And I vowed I will never put another person through that.
Okay. First of all, I need for when I post about this episode, I do need a picture of you and MJ, if that's okay,
to share.
That's incredible. My husband's a twin, not identical. He has a twin sister, but obsessed with twins. Wondered if I'd have a twin, myself have twins. There's so many twins in our family. I think it's like a magical, magical relationship to have.
Mm-hmm. He's not truly my best friend.
Well, that's incredible. It doesn't always go that way. And so how beautiful that it did. Mark J. Franklin for SEO purposes. Thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for your effervescent personality, your generosity of spirit, your incredible talent. You're such a gifted, beautiful artist, and for just bringing so much integrity and humanity to what you do and to every event. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you. And likewise, back to you. Thank you for one having me. I mean, this podcast is an institution in its own right. It is such a beacon of hope and empathy. And I just feel really honored to be on this and then also just to know you. So thank you for similarly shining a spotlight on the theater community.
Oh my God, you're such a sweetie.
A-OK.
One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved, loved, loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City. And the Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded by Georgia Famusa with backups by Caleb Famusa.